Chapter 7. Last Flight of the Grey Shields. A furious shaking gripped the Rudents. The wailing of alarms filled the air, accompanied by the dull, edge-of-hearing crackle of void shield generators working to capacity. Then the clamour was done. The insertion craft broke through the enemy line, and the unnumbered suns readied themselves to go to war one final time.
"Brothers, we are approaching the insertion point," voxed Lieutenant Sarkis. "Drop in 2 minutes. Begin final preparations. Imperator Victoriam."
"Victoriam!"
his warriors replied. Of the many tens of thousands of Primaris Space Marines created by Belisarius' call, only half were initially formed into new chapters. The rest had been gathered into great armies, each of one gene line. They wore the livery of their founding Primarchs, their badges crossed with pale grey chevrons, and within their gene groupings they were then further organised into chapter-sized formations. There, agreement with the Codex Astartes ended. Guilliman deployed his new weapons in every way imaginable. The Primaris Space Marines sometimes fought as the legions of old had, in huge formations of one type, but they also fought in mixed groups of every size, from strike teams of five up to double chapter strength. They knew the strengths of their gene cousins and their preferences. Brotherhood crossed the lines of Primarch and Gene Seed. Officially, they were designated the Unnumbered Sons of the Primarchs, but they called themselves the Grey Shields. They were the new sons of old science, and they had no fraternity but their own. As the Indomitus Crusade progressed, the Unnumbered Sons had dwindled. Rabute Guilliman took them from their companies and their squads, and he assigned them to understrength Space Marines chapters encountered on the way. Whole companies might be hived off, or only a few units. Sometimes the Primarch took them by the hundred to create new chapters where he saw the need, to guard important worlds, or to scour an area of space, or to perform whatever other task he deemed important. Warrior by warrior, the unnumbered sons were scattered across the galaxy, taking with them the secrets of their creation to their new homes. Sons of Guilliman became Aurora Marines, or Doom Eagles. Sons of Dawn joined the Black Templars, or the Imperial Fists. Sons of Korax became Raven Guard, or Revilers. By the time the fleet reached Raucus, only 20,000 of the unnumbered sons' original strength remained in the Indomitus Crusade. For one such mixed brotherhood, the final battle approached. Sergeant Justinian and his Inceptor squad hung from robotic drop arms. There were three warriors in each unit and six units in their bay, along with their leader, Lieutenant Sarkis. Cordus, scion of the line of Guilliman, flew with Justinian, as did Aldred of Dawn's breed. In the ship's other two drop bays, 36 more Primaris Space Marines awaited battle. They were giants, clad in drop armor. Inceptor battle plate reinforced for solo atmospheric re-entry, and equipped with heavy jump packs for sustained flight. For armament, they carried paired assault bolters. Like their armor, these guns were one of Belisarius' Corps' heretical marvels, massive pistols with the stopping power of heavy bolters. In the dark bay, lit only by the winking lights of machines at their work, Justinian's comrades were outlines edged in green and red. His view was restricted by a massive jump pack. The warrior before him was Solus, his friend, though only the barlight red of his plate, blood dark in the drop hold, gave his identity away. His back was high and round, like that of a monstrous beetle, the backward-pointing nozzles a pair of steel-toothed maws. Solus was so still, and his suit so large, that from the rear he appeared wholly robotic. No trace of the man inside could express itself through the layered ceramite.
"Exloading mission data. Prepare armor cogitators for cant reception," said Sarkis.
Justinian's earpiece chimed.
"Activate drop overlays. Mission active."
The overlay obstructed more of Justinian's limited view. Pulsed lasers flickered at the edge of his eye lenses, projecting a false world faceplate display directly upon his retinas. The giant reticle of a drop pylorus blinked in front of him. Two stationary circles contained by crosshairs, all divided by fine rules of measurement. The mission count glowed a dull orange, all 8 digits at 0.
Program drop coordinates, Beta 7987-3872, Kappa 0031-4822. Confirm, said Sarkis.
The overlay took up the whole of Justinian's sight. Though it existed only in the witch world of the squad's minor neurosphere, the Polaris seemed to hang solidly in the air before him. Using the neural links connecting his nervous system to his suit and its cogitator, he brought the coordinates onto the grid. The display's large wheel turned within its twin, shifting through 3 dimensions as the Rudens ploughed its way towards their drop point and his armour tracked Justinian's position. A faint roar came from the ship's engines, the vibrations conducted directly to Justinian's armour by way of the drop claw. The gentle pushback of oppositional forces grew stronger as the craft accelerated. The Rudens always came in fast.
Confirmed, said Justinian.
Indicators on his display blinked green as he homed in his suit's autosensors and cogitator on the drop zone. Paired runes flickered to the same colour in the top left. His squad was also locked on.
Squad confirmed.
The other sergeants acknowledged mission readiness as their own suits processed the drop data.
30 seconds to planetary drop, said Sarkis. Final weapons check.
Justinian went through the procedure automatically, barely conscious of what his hands were doing. Runic indicators flickered, half obscured by the drop Polaris dominating his view. Drum magazines on his assault bolters span around once, ammo feeds clicking. Chimes informed him all was well. The machine spirit of his Inceptor suit performed a number of automatic adjustments. Hissing atmosphere lines increased his internal suit pressure. The reactor beneath his jump engines whined into high output mode, then back again, and his jets gave a single hollow huff that jolted him in his harness. In front of him, Solus's jets ignited a second later, metal teeth spinning around a trapped vortex of blue fire, then went out. A schematic of his armour blinked in the upper right of Justinian's view, segments switching from amber to green. He was only half watching all this. He trusted his battleplate spirit to ready itself once the ritual activation had set it on the appropriate path. The ship shook hard. The engine's voices changed timbre. The push of acceleration shifted around his body as the ship curved away from an unseen threat. Several more jarring shakes followed as the Rudens came under fire.
There is a firestorm out there, said Sarkis. The enemy are displeased to see us.
Was that a joke, Sarkis?
Said Biani, born of the line of Russ.
I do not joke, replied the lieutenant.
A wry comment, then, said Biani.
The wolf's son was hanging from the drop line next to Justinian. He tapped him on the arm with the butt of his assault bolter.
Wish me luck, brother, he said quietly.
Vox beads fed his voice directly into Justinian's ears.
Why do you need luck more than the rest of us? Solus interrupted. It's my 13th planetfall, grumbled Biani. An ill-favoured number. The Primarch's Legion was the 13th. Do you not remember? Said Justinian. Why would I forget? Replied Biani. But where is the 13th Legion now? Made into chapters 10,000 years ago for the greater good of the Imperium, said Cordus. Broken into pieces, you mean? Said Biani. I do not want to be broken into pieces.
Red lumens flashed. The air was sucked out by powerful fans. The noise in the bay went with it.
Doors opening, doors opening, doors opening, droned a machine voice.
The narrow bay doors slid back, letting in a corridor of bright sunlight, unsoftened by atmospheric diffraction. Residual ship air froze upon the metal of the Primaris Space Marine's armour, bringing a diamond sheen to the battleplate. The drop arms went into action, pushing them out from the side of the ship, through a hull 5 meters thick, and into the fury of void war. The Rudens was a small ship of a class designed specifically for the Indomitus Crusade. Its Adeptus Astartes complement was set at 50, not even a full company. But the warriors aboard had an important role, one never seen in the armies of the Space Marines before the Ultima founding. Slender as a dart, 700 meters long, and as fast as its shape suggested, the Rudense was heavily armed for its size class, and strengthened to withstand brushes with planetary atmospheres. It was a rapid insertion craft, intended to fight its way through the maelstrom of close-range orbital combat and deliver its payload to the surface directly from the edge of a planet's atmosphere. It only had small hangars and no drop pod tubes. The Rudense was something new, and it had taken the enemy by surprise many times. Explosions burst around the Rudense, and Justinian's helm lenses darkened against the dazzle. Lasbeam stabbed from the ship's side out to infinity. The wide rays of defense lasers slammed up from the planet below, but the Rudense was artful at deception, and it was never where the lasers fired. A massive explosion ahead sent shivers along the ship. The Space Marines swung below their drop arms. Flaming debris span past, wreathed in dying sparks and glittering ices. An escort of interdiction fighters accelerated and fell in alongside the Rudense, weaving through the turmoil, and then off ahead, guns blazing. Justinian's view of the battle was limited by the projecting shield sheltering the Primaris Space Marines from the deadly impacts of micro-shrapnel and direct attack. Behind, the ship's iron immensity blocked off everything. Somewhere beyond that great metal cliff, larger ships would be fighting. For all the fury of the anti-ship fire streaking up from the surface, beneath Justinian's feet, the world floated peacefully by, its ochre surface hazed by the blue of a thin atmosphere, mottled with clouds and their shadows. He had seen many worlds from this vantage point. He had thought he would grow jaded at the sight eventually, but he never had. Every world was different, and when viewed from this height, every world, whether hell or paradise, had been beautiful in its own way.
"The calm before the storm, brother," said Solace, as if reading his thoughts. "These places we fight for," said Khalil, his armor the green of the Dark Angels. "How small they are. We hold that to ourselves as a secret truth. From space, every world is but a fragile glass ornament against the infinite black."
10 seconds, 9 seconds, 8 seconds, the machine counted down.
Justinian kept his eyes on the planet. Flashes of light burst further along its curve, drawing closer as the ship raced towards the battle site. Ground combat from orbit looked deceptively celebratory, a display of multi-hued explosions and storms of light that appeared too artful to be destructive. Shockwaves burst clouds apart, and he spied Titans lumbering away from their coffin ships. Beneath a sheath of air, the giant war machines were like aquatic insects that had never learned how to swim, doomed to laboriously plod along the pond floor.
"Battleground 250 kilometers and closing," said Sarkis, his excitement revealing itself as a slight rise in his voice. "Prepare for drop. Emperor preserve us in our flight and grant might to our fists."
4 seconds. Mark, said the machine voice. 3, 2, 1, drop. Unit 10-5011-32A, away.
The drop arm disengaged from Sarkis's back. The claw that held him dangling over the planet's sky opened silently. A disposable thruster burned on top of his drop pack, shooting him towards the target zone, and the black-clad son of Ferus Manus fell away. The booster exhausted its fuel supply quickly and detached. Sarkis fell without a word, plummeting towards the world as surely as a cogitator-guided munition. There was a flaring burst of jets as he corrected his course, and he was gone. Half a second later, the machine intoned Bjarni's Primaris number. The wolf's son fell with a whoop, a grey streak, his squad going 1, 2 after him, swift as heartbeats, their impeller jets burning and detaching. Then it was Justinian's turn.
Unit 13-10889-189E, away, said the machine, and let him fall.
The claw's release was gentle as a kiss, the firing of the impeller hard as a punch. It ceased after a second's burn. Justinian felt it come away from his jump pack, a bump in his otherwise smooth flight. Justinian plummeted. The long, slender shape of the Rudense vanished overhead, becoming a blade of light in the sky, surrounded by the starbursts of orbital combat. The ship drew away, trailing a wake of false lightning through the world's magnetosphere and chased by the stabbing beams of enemy lancers. Enemy fighters sped after it, drawing their own lines in the sky. Naval interceptors approached obliquely. They made marvelous patterns about the cruiser. Justinian fixed the sight in his memory and ordered his armor to capture a series of images at 50-millisecond intervals. Maybe, if he survived this, he would paint the war in space. Justinian liked to paint. The Polaris's nested reticles shifted slightly, and he looked down. The circles tilted within one another, providing him with a false horizon and a vertical gauge to set his descent by. Cordus and Aldred were bright orange teardrops drifting across the circles, the members of the other squads yellow dots spread above and below. A blue line rose up the display towards him. The atmosphere of 108 Beta Calipus 9.2 was thin. It would take him 20 minutes to fall to the ground. For minutes, he fell in silence. The surface was so far away, he appeared to be making no progress. There is no sharp delineation between a world's air envelope and the void, but instead a region of increasing attenuation where, atom by atom, air gives way to vacuum. But there does exist a point where the air becomes thick enough to support atmospheric flight, the Kármán line, and there air becomes thick enough to feel. Justinian hit it with a jolt. Heat followed almost immediately as friction, imperceptible only moments before, quickly built around his armor. A plasma torch roar filled his ears. The coming moments were critical. Gaining a good angle of descent at this stage would ensure mission success, a colorless statement that meant only that he would not die before the enemy got a chance to shoot at him. An alarm sounded in his ear. Cordus's signifier flashed.
Cordus! Correct course, 2 points vertical. You are drifting, said Justinian.
Yes, brother sergeant,
Cordus responded. His signifier dot and its accompanying rune moved across Justinian's display, and the graphic ceased blinking. The others spread out into a wide dispersion pattern. 3 targets awaited the demi-company's attention, a series of closely bunched bastions, each one bristling with ordnance. A bright corona of heat streamed around Justinian, most intense about the reinforced ceramite of his boots. It became uncomfortable, but not dangerous. Provided there was no breach in his interceptor battleplate, he would be safe. Soon after, he reached terminal velocity and stopped accelerating. The curve of the world grew quickly, filling his vision with the ground. As the minutes passed, space retreated to the periphery of his vision and vanished. When the last of the black was gone, he finally felt like he was falling. Individual surface features resolved themselves, details popping into sharp definition, though all were flattened by his relative height, so that mountains appeared as painted flourishes upon a round canvas. Below him, fighting raged upon a plain bordered by a range of hills pierced by a wide valley. Across the valley mouth was a great wall and a strong fortress not far behind. 2 battle lines became visible. Their exchanges of fire were startling weaves of light. A vast phalanx of Astra Militarum tanks, supported by Adeptus Mechanicus cyborg troops and war machines, advanced on the wall from the drop zone. The wall looked like a ribbon, but in truth it was almost 100 meters tall and 40 wide. The titans of the Legio Metallica swelled, their carapace insignia taking on form. They were now the size of men, and the warriors milling about their feet had become the insects. The scene grew before Justinian's eyes, unfolding like a fractal tapestry. Aircraft sped below, swift as avians, dueling with draconic demon engines for control of the sky.
Demi Company, split, ordered Sarkis. Squads to target designated mission objectives in 3, 2, 1. Fire jets! Formation disperse! Fire jets, ordered Justinian.
A smaller reticle ignited in the center of his Polaris and settled over his own squad's landing zone, the middle tower of the wall, the tallest one. His jets roared furiously against the drag of the planet. Justinian slowed only a little, but his course altered, and he was sent hurtling laterally towards the tower. They avoided firing their jets until the last second of a drop. When the Inceptors had first been deployed, the enemy had mistaken their squads for falling debris or stray munitions. In the chaos of battle, they had been paid little attention until it was too late. Lately, the foes of the Imperium had become wise to Inceptor drop tactics. The sky filled with a storm of flak moments after their jets finished burning. Justinian fell through a wash of fire. Shrapnel pinged off his armor. The thunder of atmosphere lessened. The demi-company's attack spread widened, the dots that denoted each warrior perfectly positioned in three clusters, one for each defense tower. The target went from a child's toy to a towering edifice in a matter of seconds.
"Fire jets! Prolonged burst!" he ordered. "Decelerate to engagement speed! Rouse the spirits of your weapons!"
He hefted his own guns, eager to unleash them upon the enemy. His jets ignited again, and this time they stayed burning. The fuel gauge in his display rapidly fell from full to a third as he braked. He was no longer falling, but flying, and that ate up his fuel quickly. In a graceful arc, he and his squad thundered towards the upper battlements of the tower. The bastion was ludicrously embellished with screaming demonic faces, its crenellations tall and fashioned into unnecessary spikes, but it was well armored, and four quad flak cannons squatted in heavy turrets at each corner, banging off shots at the attacking space marines. Heretic Astartes opened fire as the Inceptors approached, and their fire was more worrisome than the flak cannons. A bolt round spanked off the cowling of Justinian's left jet nozzle, staggering his flight. More bolts came, then a flurry of them. Cordus's ident signifier blinked to red and fell away from Justinian's display. Justinian risked a glance back. Smoke and explosions hid Cordus's face, and he did not see his comrade die. Another bolt smacked into his breastplate, cracking the outer casing and fracturing the power cabling beneath. Smoke blew from the crack, and his jump pack engines coughed. A lurching drop made his stomach flip. Icons blinked, alarms squealed. Justinian prepared to fall to his death while he sought a solution to his power failure. At his urging, the cogitator in his suit rerouted power. The jets roared again, and he surged on with renewed speed. Sealant foam bubbled up to plug the breach in his armor. The enemy would have to try harder to stop him than that. Justinian dropped down, then burst upward and over the battlements, Aldred beside him. Half a dozen members of the Iron Warriors lined the parapet. Bolt guns flashed, revealing horned helms and faceplates cast with demonic visages. They were terrifying foes, made Adeptus Astartes by the Emperor and granted greater vigor by their dark gods. Once, they were the mightiest warriors in the galaxy. They were the mightiest no longer.
"Your death has been too long coming," Justinian roared, his voxed shout blasting from his helm as he descended on pillars of fiery smoke. "Prepare yourselves for the Emperor's judgment!"
He came down with a bone-jarring thump, hard enough to crack the ferrocrete of the tower, guns already blazing fire. Assault bolters were powerful weapons, but if used unwisely, they would run through their ammunition stores in seconds. Justinian checked his fury. The resupply pods had yet to land. Even utilized with care, the assault bolters fired at a terrifying rate. Flames blazed from the weapon's exhaust slots. Explosions smashed the Iron Warriors from their feet, hurling them backwards with a force that a standard bolter could not hope to emulate. Bjarni came over the side, howling joyously, his warriors following him. Then came Sergeant Rusticus's squad, of which Solus was a part. The Primaris Space Marines looked almost as demonic as their foes, with their vari-colored liveries scorched and smoking from the heat of their descent. Caught between the murderous crossfire of eight Primaris Inceptors, the Iron Warriors were cut to pieces. One of them came at Justinian through the firestorm, a chain axe raised. Justinian leapt back from him with a controlled burst of his jets, retargeting one of his guns on the warrior as he flew. He could not let the enemy get close. The Inceptor loadout's only real weakness was a lack of melee weaponry. The guns he held in his gauntlets, however, meant it wasn't much of a weakness at all. Justinian's bolts hit the traitor square in the chest. The iron warrior's antique armor burst apart, spraying his ancient innards in a red slick across the ramparts, and his chain axe fell to the ground. Its teeth bit on the ferrocrete, and it span madly before the motor cut out with a muted growl.
"For the Emperor! For Gilliman! For mankind!"
Justinian shouted, stamping across the bastion's roof. He was taller than the heretic Astartes. Shock-absorbent calipers around the lower part of his legs and feet granted him more height, and he fired over the heads of his enemy as they dropped dead. The last of the traitors fell. They had not been caught by surprise. They had seen the Inceptors coming. It did not matter. None could stand before the Primaris Space Marines, the new sons of the Emperor. Sergeant Rusticus's warriors went to the flak cannons, raised their assault bolters, and riddled the firing mechanisms. Bolts exploded inside the guns, setting off their shells. The cannon barrels fell away from popping detonations, clanging from the ornate tower sides and falling down to the wall ramparts far below. Soon, all four cannons were smoking ruins.
"Primary objective achieved. Anti-air guns are silent," Vox Justinian,
his feed going to Lieutenant Sarkis and the command cadre of his Primaris chapter simultaneously.
"Pursuing secondary objective."
With Aldred's garish imperial fists yellow at his side, Justinian stormed down the stairs into the lower levels. His guns banged out death to everything he encountered. There were an insignificant number of traitor space marines within. That had been the pattern these last few years. The armies of Chaos were legion and everywhere, but it was arguable that they were losing their best to Gilliman's relentless crusading. Most of the tower's defenders were born thralls or deluded mortals from the conquered worlds who had thrown in their lot with evil for the chance at a few more weeks' life. They came at him in hordes, dirty faces branded and tattooed, twisted into desperate snarls. Justinian cut them down without mercy.
"Death to the traitor who in weakness denies the supremacy of the Emperor," he said, emotionlessly.
They died messily, their frail bodies blown to pieces by his assault bolter's mass-reactive shells. More took their place, coming so quickly that Justinian ceased firing to conserve his ammunition and commenced clubbing them down. The tower soon ran with blood, and his armor's colors were obscured. Justinian and Aldred fought their way further down the stairwell, passing through several levels. Bjarni's squad was close behind them. At the 16th level, they parted ways, Bjarni singing loudly as he led his squadmates toward the power core. Justinian and Aldred headed for the Bastion's fire control center, whose machine banks and slave mines directed the vast array of artillery projecting from the lower reaches of the building. The occasional vox blurt came through to Justinian, status updates or requests for reports from Lieutenant Sarkis or from his unnumbered Sons of Gilliman line commander. Nothing higher tier than that. Sarkis and others like him bore that responsibility. Their guns spoke less often. The bravest of the thralls were dead. A few still threw themselves hopelessly at the Primaris Space Marines. Most sank to their knees and begged for forgiveness. All died.
"There is no forgiveness. Better to die twice than betray the Emperor. You made the wrong choice."
And Justinian's assault bolters would bark, or his fists would swing, leaving red ruin where men had knelt. Battle was replaced by a fragile calm for a time. The building evinced little of the touch of Chaos, being fairly made of plasteel plating upon a ferrocrete core of near indestructible thickness. The sheer mass of it dulled the thunder of battle outside upon the plains, so that the worst of it was felt only as gentle tremors, and the rest they did not notice at all. Machines hummed in the fabric of the building. Although the decoration was barbarous, the grisly trophies nailed to walls and set upon spikes told of the Iron Warrior's bloodier proclivities. The warp was absent. When they reached fire control, that changed. A large room of three stepped tiers, the tower's fire control center was similar in design to those in Imperial fortifications. The two had the same origin, so that was to be expected. But what occupied the fire control center here would never be found in any Imperial facility. Where ranks of tech thralls and servitors should sit, guiding the weapons of the fortress to the commands of their masters, there was instead a thick, organic mess. Tendrils of noisome matter linked wall to wall. This filthy mass grew thicker in the middle, somehow coming together to make a living thing, though at its edges it was nothing more than a set of flimsy, folded membranes. At its thickest part, pulsing veins made the whole thing quiver. A soft keening sounded from somewhere, and an intolerable sense of suffering pressed at the Primaris Space Marine's minds.
"Emperor, preserve us," said Justinian.
Exposure to warp-born horror did nothing to lessen his revulsion. Countless times he had seen creatures made of the pressed flesh of men, mutant weavings of corrupted genes, and demons trapped in machine and mortal form. No matter how often he saw these things, they never failed to disgust him.
"If any pure machine exists here, then I commend your spirit to the God of Mars," he said loudly.
He meant it sincerely. Though he had no belief in the Emperor as Omnissiah, he respected the machine's own beliefs. He raised his gun and opened fire. Aldred joined him, raising both guns and filling the rotten mess with explosive rounds. The keening became a scream. Gunfire blew huge holes in the organism, opening its innards to the smoking air. Hot, yellow liquid slopped from it in amounts the thing could not possibly contain. The scream grew so loud it made the noise suppression equipment of their helmets thrum. When it abruptly cut out, their aural equipment squealed with relief. The oppressive nature of the room disappeared, along with the creature's death cry.
"Whatever that was, it is dead," said Aldred.
Physalene smoke wisped from his guns. Heat bloom discolored their muzzles. A moment later, the lumens died, and the few machines in the room relying on more natural forms of power flickered off.
"Biani has fulfilled his role," said Justinian.
He switched to a direct vox link to Lieutenant Sarkis.
"Tower beta is neutralized. Flak batteries are down. Central fire control destroyed."
"Affirmative. Notification heard," replied Sarkis.
"We are done here. Rendezvous with the others. Await further instruction."
"Come on," said Justinian to Aldred. "We shall wait upon the roof. We can jump free if the enemy decide to bring the building down around us."
By the time they rejoined Biani and Rustica's squads on the parapet, drop pods were plummeting down from the sky like fiery rain. They touched down behind the wall, untroubled by flak, thanks to the Primaris Inceptor squads. Similarly, the army outside now advanced free from the attentions of artillery fire. Biani peered down over the parapet, then turned his grey helmet towards Justinian and Rusticus.
"It is boring up here."
"We are awaiting orders," said Rusticus.
"We are awaiting orders," parroted Biani dismissively, mocking Rusticus's grave voice.
"Well, fine for you. I'm not missing the battle. Are you two honestly going to stand here and watch?"
He ignited his jump pack, its throaty roar deafening in such proximity. Heatwash battered Justinian as Biani's squadmates followed suit. Rusticus cursed.
"Savage," he said,
but meant it fondly, more or less. Justinian laughed dryly.
"I would hurry if I were you," voxed Biani.
His assault bolters made long, pealing reports under his voice.
"I will save you some, but there are not that many left."
"He is right," said Justinian.
"He is not following protocol," said Rusticus.
"Lieutenant Sarkis, this is Sergeant Justinian, notifying immediate re-engagement in combat. Tower is clear. We move to aid landing forces."
Justinian activated his jets, slowly. Slamming them into action like Biani had done shortened the lifespan of the jet rotors.
"There, Brother Sergeant," he said to Rusticus. "Protocol satisfied."
Justinian opened up his jet throttle. Aldred followed him over the parapet. His fuel indicator was blinking madly, the tank close to exhaustion. It added to the exhilaration of dropping into combat. The ground rushed up at him so fast in comparison to his stately freefall from orbit, he barely had time to process the sprinting figures and explosions before he was in the thick of battle. He shut his jets off 10 meters above the ground, letting his impact dampeners take the jolt of falling. He landed in a crouch, stood with the grumbling purr of his armor soothing his ears, and strode into battle. The fighting was ahead of him, the lee of the tower quiet. No drop pod or gunship could land close by it, and no foes remained to pour from the bastion's armored gates. The sun was on the other side of the building, and the shadow it cast coincided with this minor dominion of calm. As soon as Justinian and Aldred were out into the full, weak light of 108 Beta Calipus 9.2, the battle seemed to notice them and gather them enthusiastically to itself. Drop pods filled the space behind the wall, doors blowing open with violent shouts and allowing out their cargoes of power-armored angels. Several pods had been hit close to the ground and listed, blazing, hazing the air with thick towers of black smoke. More numerous were the shattered wrecks of traitor fighting vehicles. What had been a wide-open killing space had become a tightly packed maze of broken armor. Within it, age-old foes hunted one another, intent on hatreds born at the dawn of the Imperium. Loosing off tightly controlled shots, Justinian strode into the broil of war. The traitors had become fragmented. Many were trapped on the wall tens of meters above. There they made their last stand, assailed by space marines coming at them from the towers either side, and by the greater forces arrayed outside the walls. Others were falling back, firing, using their armored vehicles to cover their retreat back to their fortress. Their great castle of steel loomed in the near distance, more brutal and over-decorated than the wall towers.
"Where is Bjarni?" asked Justinian. "We will never find him in this," said Aldred. "Then we shall count those we kill and shame the wolf brother when we return to the Rudens." "Rusticus," said Aldred, pointing to the sky. The other squad's 3 members hurtled down from above, disappearing into the cauldron of battle.
"More rivals for the battle tally, as our Fenrisian friend would have it," said Justinian.
"You spend too much time with him. Warfare should be more considered."
"You sound like Rusticus."
Justinian and Aldred were so massive in their heavy drop armor that they had no chance of stealth, and so they pounded through the tangled wrecks, relying on speed to shield them.
"Rusticus speaks sense," said Aldred, "but I concede, Bjarni's manner of war can be entertaining."
They rounded the cantered hulk of a heavy drop pod, its paint scorched to bare metal, and the lower thruster assembly pushed up into the passenger compartment by force of impact. The main stanchions were rumpled with spent forces, and the lower parts of the jammed door buckled like card. A precise cluster of lasburns had drilled the side. Fire roared from the top, and a whiff of cooking flesh penetrated Justinian's breathing filters. The maze thinned out here, and the field opened up again. Only a few wrecked tanks, all blazing ferociously, stood between them and the foe. There were more of the enemy than Justinian expected, and well supported with armor.
"Brother!"
Justinian voxed on their closed net. He held up one of his hands, almost encased by the assault bolter's bulky firing mechanisms.
"A chance to aid our cousins."
Close to their position, 5 enemy Predator battle tanks were rolling backwards, firing as they withdrew, their thicker armor presented towards the main press of the Imperial forces. Their heavy bolters had pinned a squad of Space Marines from the Silver Skulls chapter behind a burning wreck, and a squad of Heretic Astartes were moving in to flank their position.
"There, to the left,"
said Justinian, his cogitator canting over his intended target to Aldred.
"A good choice,"
said the yellow-clad Son of Dawn. Together, the Primaris Space Marines jumped, sailing over the heads of the embattled Silver Skulls. Bullets whined past, bolt shells roaring by on the hot blades of rocket motors, and lasbeams cracked the air with miniature thunderclaps. While skyborne, the 2 Inceptors briefly became a favored target. Death of various kinds knocked upon the thick plating of their armour, but none could gain entry to the soft meat within. Justinian heeded a rising shriek from his inbuilt tacticarium, swerving out of the way to allow the rocket it had detected to pass between him and Aldred. Then they were down, and their would-be killers found other things to fire at. They landed off to the right of the Iron Warriors, skulking round through the piles of wrecked machines. Justinian and Aldred had not been seen by their prey, and they took shelter behind a broken-backed night carcass. Blasphemous sigils covered its carapace, and its cockpit was cracked open, revealing an ossified melding of man and machine, where a human pilot should have sat.
"They have not seen us," said Aldred.
"They will," said Justinian.
He stepped out, both arms at full extension, and opened fire. The Iron Warrior's armor was sufficiently thick that they weathered the first flurry of mass reactive bolts. They therefore had time to register the two Primaris Space Marines flanking them, but several fell before they could return fire. Justinian's left assault bolter clicked dry. A red warning sigil shone angrily near the center of his vision, and he ducked back behind the knight. The ammo indicator for his second gun flickered.
"I am down to 7 rounds," he informed Aldred.
Aldred laughed dryly. 7 rounds was a half-second burst.
"I have only a few more. We need to reload."
Justinian pulled up the location of a Primaris resupply pod almost 200 meters away.
"I have a location."
The Silver Skulls were still under fire from the Predators, but thanks to the Primaris Inceptors, they were now aware of the more pressing threat. A fierce firefight had commenced between the Loyalist Space Marines and the remaining heretic Astartes.
"A shame we cannot do more," said Aldred.
An explosion ripped up one of the Predators, flinging its burning remains end over end.
"We do not have to," said Justinian.
3 repulsor grav tanks fell from the sky like stones, decelerating rapidly and coming to a gentle halt a couple of meters above the ground, right by the flanking Iron Warriors. Their pulsing, aggressive grav impellers knocked the traitors sideways. One of the Iron Warriors yanked a melter bomb from his side and dove under the tank, seeking to attach the charge and destroy the Primaris armor. The traitor had evidently never faced a repulsor before. The tank's pounding grav engine squashed him flat, leaving a silver, blurred human outline pressed into the ground, leaking blood. The grav tank's anti-infantry weapons made short work of his fellow traitors, and the repulsors flew onwards, the sand crushed to a glassy shine beneath them. The enemy predators redirected their fire, increasing their rate of retreat as they volleyed las cannon shots at the Primaris grav tanks. But the repulsors were swift as well as dangerous, and they chased down their traitorous tracked cousins, blasting them apart with pinpoint accuracy. They flew over their vanquished foes, buckling the wrecks with gravitic backwash. The Silver Skulls ran after them, the jewels on their pauldrons sparking. A terrific roaring rent the sky, so loud that it even drowned out the pounding of the Titans approaching the wall. Hundreds more drop pods and gunships were coming down from orbit, many racing off to attack the fortress. In seconds, the wide space beyond the field of wrecks and already landed drop pods was just as crowded with newly arrived craft. Explosive door bolts blew in miniature rippling cannonades as the petals of the drop pods slammed down. 5,000 Space Marines disgorged from their landing craft as the Astra Militarum forces reached the foot of the wall on the other side. Stern-faced Titans loomed over the fortifications, raking the ramparts free of the enemy with gigantic power fists wreathed with the lightning of 100 storms. The crackling of disruption fields, powerful enough to crush a small void ship, harshened the battle's sound. A part of the wall came crashing down beneath a Titan's ponderous blow. As the debris landed, the Titan was already turning, its carapace-mounted cannon roaring fire at some other target Justinian could not see.
"It is over," said Justinian. "The battle is won."
The howling of Legio Metallica warhorns, the traitors upon the wall were surrounded and destroyed. The fortress fell 5 hours later.